This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A talk in Wausau tonight is taking on the issue of extremism and radicalization in young people. And the pair leading it are unlikely friends. Pardeep Kalika's father was killed in the 2012 Sikh temple shootings in Oak Creek, and Arno Michaelis is a former white supremacist. The two have teamed up to found the group Serve to Unite, which works to stop young people from falling prey to extremist ideologies. They're the co-authors of the book, The Gift of Our Words, a Sikh and a former white supremacist find forgiveness after hate. They both join us now from our studio in Wausau. Pardeep, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, good afternoon, Rob.
And Arno, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Rob. Thank you.
Well, we could talk for hours about each of your stories, but I just want to touch on them a little bit before we get into what you're working on now. Arno, can you give us a story of going from this place of white supremacy to leaving it, to finding a different spirit in your life?
Well, the quick glimpse of it is just that when you are under the influence of a violent extremist narrative, it destroys your life. It destroys your ability to love, to connect with the world around you. And I look back on that 7 years I spent in that world as the darkest time of my 48 years. And today, every day, I'm very grateful that I'm no longer that person and very grateful to the brave people who helped lead me here.
Yeah, talk about that, Arno. Who was it that inspired you to break out of that story?
It was primarily people that I claimed to hate who refused to capitulate to my hostility by reflecting it and instead demonstrated for me how human beings should treat each other. People like a Jewish boss, a lesbian supervisor, black and Latino coworkers, all defied the aggression that I radiated into the world and instead showed me compassion and kindness. And that was a huge factor in my turnaround. It indicated in a very powerful way how wrong I was to think the way that I did. And it helped to change my heart and mind.
And Pardeep, you lost your father in one of the most horrific events in recent Wisconsin history, the 2012 temple shooting in Oak Creek. What led you to not just live through that, but to say, what can I do to change things?
Well, just as Arno spoke about defying, we wanted to defy what happened to us and really just get out into the community and transform that crime or transform that tragedy into one of inspiration and triumph. And we knew that we had a responsibility not only to ourselves as a community to heal, but we had a responsibility to the broader community as they showed up on that day and continue to show up, now 7.5, 8 years later. And we're still struggling with some of the difficulties of what inspired that shooter that day. We're just grateful that we can partner up with the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service and really hammer home this message of love and healing.
And Pardeep, you and Arno, both from Milwaukee, very different paths in life. What brought the two of you in particular together?
The spirit. I mean, I don't want to sound a cliche there was a spirit of healing. And both of us at that time were trying to address wounds that we both felt from the past and from that day and really just understanding our own responsibility and carrying that forward and really trying to heal both ourselves and this community led us to that spirit that brought both of us together. And, we didn't know at the time that we were going to come to Wausau and be able to talk at the high school, which we all invite you to come tonight, 7 p.m., Wausau East High School. But I don't think that we could have told you that this was going to happen. But we were both just working with that same spirit of healing.
And Arno, you guys work in particular with younger people and students as at this high school today. Why were they the group that you wanted really to reach out to?
Really, because Pardeep and I need teachers. And these young people are just such amazing examples of what's best about humanity and about the concept of hope and of progress and of working towards a world where all people are valued and included. And that's really what drew us to work with young people. They're the ones shaping this future. And despite all the challenges in our society nowadays, despite all the political polarization, working with young people really helps us feel good about the future, and we're excited to be at the high school this evening.
And Pardeep, as I understand it, the work the two of you do isn't just the two of you lecturing to young people. You bring kids on to work on things through the, I think it's called the Serve to Unite program. Can you tell us how that works?
Sure. The Serve to Unite program was formed as a response to what happened on August 5th, 2012, but then it quickly morphed into a program addressing positive identity development within schools, and that quickly morphed into addressing positive identity development within communities. And so we worked in schools for the major part of the last seven years, but as of the last 2 or 3 years, we have been really partnering with small communities, law enforcement, federal law enforcement, faith groups, just to address sort of the communal trauma that exists and persists in our society, and really understanding what we all can do to become a more connected society.
Talking to Pardeep Kalika and Arno Michaelis, co-founders of the group Serve to Unite. Their book is titled The Gift of Our Words, A Sikh and a Former White Supremacist Find Forgiveness After Hate. They're talking to us from our Wausau studio, and then they're going to talk tonight at 7 at the Wausau East High School Auditorium. We see in the news just over the weekend graffiti, anti-Semitic graffiti found on a Racine synagogue, other vandalism incidents like that around the country, from events like this to shootings. Arno, does it get hard to keep up hope when you keep seeing more and more examples of the kind of things you're working against?
It's certainly discouraging. And for me, considering my past, I take racist, anti-Semitic, any hate-driven targeted violence personally. I feel like it's a failure of mine when these things happen. And it really ratchets up the urgency that I feel to work towards a society where that's going to be less likely to happen. I'm not under any illusion that, you know, all conflict and all hate and all strife is ever going to end, but it's really about the process of peace and understanding how important that is, and really getting to the point where you love that process. And if we can get people in society to love the process of their life, for good, bad, or ugly, as the Sikh principle of Charikala is really all about. I think that's a very powerful antidote and inoculation against the kind of hate and really suffering and hurting that leads people to lash out in hateful ways.
Pardeep, one of the most inspiring things I saw after the tragedy of the Sikh temple shooting in Oak Creek, I think a lot of people would have understood if the community there had said, an outsider came and attacked us, we're going to wall ourselves off in some way. But what actually happened was the community there started inviting people in for meals and events. How do we react to events in a way that tries to include and reach out to other people instead of putting up barriers?
You know, the spiritual challenge that we face with 7 billion growing in a growing population worldwide is a spiritual challenge. And we can all understand when we sort of close off and we can, self-silo ourselves. But the spiritual challenge is really, you know, can we be courageous and really embrace one another? You know, it's easy to embrace somebody that looks like you, walks like you, dresses like you, believes like you. But it's a spiritual challenge to embrace the person that does not. And so that's what our society is facing right now. We face a very spiritual challenge. And if we can if we can embrace the future that our children are going to navigate, I think we're up to the challenge.
Arno, you came into and then out of a white supremacist hate ideology. When you look back, do you think there's a point in your life where if you'd heard the right thing or met the right people, it would have kept you from going down that path in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. The timing of my evolution and my path just happened to shake down so that these acts of bravery that people who, as Pardeep described, who had the spiritual strength to see themselves in someone who was absolutely not like them really changed the course of my life. And it certainly could have changed the course of my life had it happened earlier. And as my life was changed by that sort of spiritual power, I think that's why it's all the more important for me especially to try to set that example for other people.
And Pardeep, in one way, you're reaching out to try to help people, to send a message to people one person at a time. But you mentioned earlier the idea of communities developing, I guess you could call it a kind of resilience to help avoid falling into hateful ideologies. What can communities do working together?
You know, me and Arnold have traveled East Coast to West Coast, and we have been to mass shooting after mass shooting, interpersonal violence to inner city violence. And we want to usher in a spirit of healing survivorship, meaning that we can be stronger than we were before because we don't take life for granted. And I will say that personally, before the shooting happened, I took life for granted and I took my responsibilities for granted. I think we do that too often. You know, our book is called The Gift of Our Wounds. And words is great too, but wounds, meaning that, you know, we 500 years of wounds, the last 50 years of wounds. What do we do, and how do we grow from the wounds that we've suffered? Not, you know, maybe a mass shooting doesn't happen to somebody, but maybe they're suffering through their own personal wounds that they feel like they can't get over, or they can't get through. And what we want to instill in them is just a sense of hope.
Arno, when you work with young people one-on-one, do they inspire you, as Pardeep was talking about earlier? Do you feel hope working with young people today?
Oh, absolutely. My resilience is largely drawn from the leadership that our young people in not just the United States but throughout the world exhibit. I'm very fortunate to do a ton of traveling. I'll be on the road 8 months this year. I just got back from India, where I was working with UNESCO Mahatma Gandhi Institute for Education of Peace, and I was running workshops with a group of 60 young people from 27 different countries, all of whom were already engaged in really unbelievable peace-building activities, and they had all gathered in New Delhi to work with me to expand their capacity and become even better at the peace-building work that they do. So things like that really inspire me and help me keep going in spite of any discouraging things that may happen.
And Pardeep, in our last minute, if someone sees something in their community, they see the graffiti or hateful messages at the football game or whatever it might be, how would you encourage them to respond?
No. They're allowed to be angry because it shouldn't make us angry. It's a natural emotion. But they shouldn't be so angry that they become dysfunctional. We have a saying in Sikhi, it's called Chardi Kalab, which means relentless optimism. And we have to be relentlessly optimistic that the moral arc of this universe bends to the good, and it will.
Pardeep, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Arno, thanks for coming to our Wausau studio.
Thank you, Rob.
Been talking to Pardeep Kalika and Arno Michaelis. They're the co-authors of the book, The Gift of Our Wounds. I'm sorry, I said words earlier. A Sikh and former white supremacist find forgiveness after hate. They're the co-founders of the group Serve to Unite, which works to stop young people from falling prey to extremist ideologies. You can see them in Wausau tonight. They'll share their story at the Wausau East High School Auditorium at 7 o'clock. More details about that event online at wpr.org/centraltime. Coming up after the news, hundreds of trucking companies have gone out of business this year. We'll look at the industry and what's behind that trend. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Out of all the supplies and goods that get shipped within the United States, about 70% travel by truck. That makes trucking a competitive industry for the hundreds of thousands of different companies around the country. This year, the business is seeing a bit of a downturn. More than 600 carriers went out of business in the first half of this year. That's more than double the amount of closures in all of 2018. But our next guest says, given the up and down nature of trucking, it's not entirely unexpected. Jennifer Smith is a reporter at The Wall Street Journal, covering logistics and the supply chain. Jennifer, welcome to Central Time.
My pleasure.
Can you give us a sense of how tough this year has been in terms of these trucking company closures?
So 2019 has been a challenging year for a number of trucking companies, and it's in a large degree because 2018 was a really great year to be providing freight transportation. There was a lot of demand, and a lot of trucking companies, large and small, did very well. Fast forward to 2019, that demand has dropped off a little bit, especially on the industrial side. That's driven in part by concerns about trade and the tariffs and general sort of an uncertainty as companies, manufacturers are sort of delaying some decisions and the volume of freight that they're moving isn't what it used to be. So there's that piece. Then at the same time, so you have less revenue for some trucking companies, but at the same time, their costs remain the same, particularly for those that had raised pay for their drivers in 2018. So, you know, they've got the same expenses and less revenue coming in. So that puts some of them in a little bit of a spot.
So not that 2019 is historically a really bad year for trucking. It's just that it's maybe more of a normal year after people geared up after a fantastic year. Is that right?
You could definitely say that the year-to-year comps are pretty challenging. The overall freight volumes have been sort of softening and leveling off, but it's certainly not it's not so much a crash as it would be a pretty marked contrast to what was an atypical year the prior year.
But a fair amount of companies, it sounds like, have closed especially in the first half of 2019. Now, how do we compare to the pace of trucking company closures previously?
So for the stats that we have looked at, the pace of failures on trucking company failures was definitely up for the first half of the year, a number of times beyond what it was in 2018. And of course, every business has its own story that led it to the process of closing the doors. But what does seem to be happening is for trucking companies that relied heavily on what's called the spot market, where they're picking up freight that needs to be moved on online load boards versus having these longer term arrangements with customers, spot market pricing really dove this year, and that's hurt trucking companies that were that had a lot of their business in the spot market. So that's one aspect of what was happening. I've also heard anecdotally that insurance costs have been going up, and that can be difficult for some carriers, for smaller carriers, or for carriers if you've had a very bad accident. Obviously your rates are going to go up, or perhaps there's even a judgment, a court judgment against you that can kind of cause the company to have some difficulty.
And did I read this right? In some cases, a company is shutting down and their drivers are still out on the road, and all of a sudden their gas cards are offline. They're basically stuck.
That has happened. It's happened in past trucking failures, and it did happen last month with the closure of a Denver-based trucking company. Obviously, that's not how you'd ideally like to wind a business down. And of course, that also leaves the prospect of shippers wondering where their freight is. You know, it's in the back of a truck that's somewhere, and the driver can't get back, and he can't get gas in the truck. So in that most recent case, when I'd spoken with one of the former executives with the company, he had said he was working to get those fuel cards turned back on so the drivers could deliver their loads and get home. But that's one of the hazards that happens when a truck company shuts down. If there's not a lot of notice, people and freight can just be stranded.
When we see a bunch of companies shut down, as we did at least in the first half of this year, does that mean overall there's less trucking, less shipping going on? Or is it also that there's consolidation? So some of those bigger companies might be taking up more of the load.
It's hard for me to speak directly to that. What I think it speaks most clearly to are that operating conditions are a little bit more challenging this year than they were previously. Trucking's a very fragmented industry, and even the very largest publicly traded companies that have thousands of trucks, most of the freight in the U.S. that moves by truck is being moved by quite small trucking companies that maybe have 20 trucks or less, a lot of owner-operators who are in the mix. So, there are individual circumstances that can lead to some of the shutdowns, but certainly the challenging pricing is not helping, nor is the fact that the cost for sort of retaining drivers has gone up over the past year.
So Talking to Jennifer Smith from the Wall Street Journal about the trucking industry, more closures in that industry than last year for a variety of reasons, as we're hearing. And Jennifer, your reporting opened my eyes. I don't know what goes on behind the scenes in the trucking world. There's been a technological, I don't know about revolution, but a big change in terms of how shippers find people to carry their freight driven by online technology. What has been the change there?
So there's been a lot of moves in what's called online freight brokerage, or what a lot of startups had called, you know, themselves Uber for freight. Now, of course, Uber has its own online freight brokerage called Uber Freight, so that name maybe doesn't have as much power in an elevator pitch as it used to. But what's happening is, for some years now, there have been things called load boards where retailers or manufacturers who needed to move a load would post up a load on a board, and truckers or carriers could sort of offer a price for it and bid. So that process has been online for some time. What's happened in the last few years is a number of startups had come up that are using algorithms and sort of a more accelerated pace of technology to try and bring more efficiency to that process of kind of getting together shippers and truckers and arranging for loads to be moved. So there's a number of folks that are doing that, and then you also have transportation companies that have traditionally, had freight brokerage operations. They're spending millions and millions on technology to keep up and to make the process more efficient, because the more efficient it is, you know, the more revenue you can generate.
And you mentioned earlier the spot market. And so if I have that right, and correct me if I don't, that means if I'm a trucking company, instead of saying, okay, I'm going to have a years-long relationship with these companies and ship their stuff, now there's an ability and maybe a temptation to go online and say, hey, there's a premium delivery available tomorrow. I can grab that and maybe make more money than I could have building those long-term relationships. Is that a tendency or a trend?
Well, the spot market has been around for a long time, and that's sort of how freight brokerages, do a lot of their business. But it certainly last year, when prices in the spot market were going through the roof, some truckers and certainly some trucking companies might have moved more of their business to the spot market because they could get better prices. The prices there tend to be a little bit more volatile than what you call contract pricing, which is when trucking companies and a manufacturer, or a retailer, or a shipper have a kind of arrangement where, you know, you'll move loads for me at roughly this price. On the shipper side, people also go to the spot market sometimes for whatever reason their load gets turned down by whoever their contract carrier is. You know, sometimes you need a load to be moved more quickly than you would have thought, so you might go to the spot market to book that transportation. And on the shipper side, now that pricing is not as lucrative on the spot market, you know, perhaps some people are moving more business there, but things that may be happening a little bit under the margins.
What are you watching for next as you watch developments in the trucking industry?
Well, we're keeping a close eye on volumes that are coming in through the ports. We're sort of about to head into peak shipping season, the holiday season. So, you know, imports should be coming in, particularly through the West Coast ports. And as those boxes get, unloaded off container ships, they're going to move onto trucks, get moved into warehouses, get moved into distribution centers or online fulfillment centers, and get sent out ultimately to people's homes or to brick and mortar stores. So we're keeping an eye on those volumes to get a sense of how peak might look. Thus far, the carriers that I've talked to, the big trucking companies, seem to think that it'll be, you know, and some of the port operators think that peak season, it should be relatively normal, different than last year, which was an atypical year. But they're expecting, some reasonable holiday volumes, nothing crazy, I think, in either direction.
Jennifer, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Jennifer Smith is a reporter at the Wall Street Journal covering logistics and the supply chain. I talked to her earlier today about why hundreds of trucking companies have gone out of business this year, more than double the number of closures in all of 2018.